Likutei Sichais, Parshas B'Shalach, the third Sicha. Oh, Likutei Sichais Chelik, Yud Aleph. The third Sicha, which is also a conclusion of the tractate of the Meseches of Erevin. Sicha, which was said in the Rebbe's yard site, the Rebbe's father's yard site, 1962. So, again, very exciting sicha, with a lot going on in the footnotes, and a whole new dimension on how to understand Shabbos in our own personal lives and our relationship to work and mundaneness, even during the weekday. These are, I would say, there's kind of three lives of the sicha, the actual main content of the Gemara discussion, halachic discussion, the continuation brings it into the spiritual side and the way we can internalize it as a message for life, and the footnotes, which are exhilarating and invigorating. Let's jump in there. I'll try and share some of them with you. On the pasuk in our portion, in B'Shalach, which says, a person should not go out of his place on the seventh day. Our sages tell us, Rashi brings it here, that this refers to 2,000 amma, which are the tchum, which are the amount that somebody is allowed to go out on Shabbos. We're not talking about carrying something, we're talking about physically walking outside of the city. 2,000 amma. In other words, from this pasuk, we learn the prohibition to go out of the 2,000 amma range outside of the city. So long as you're in the city, no issue. Once you go out of the city, you have a 2,000 amma range. The Rebbe does point out here, already sent in a footnote, that in chapter, paragraph 6, and I'm gonna inject it here. In paragraph 6, we have three opinions about this concept, about how far you can walk out of the city on Shabbos. There is one opinion that 2,000 amma, an amma is approximately 48 centimeters. 2,000 amma is thus 960 meters. There's the opinion that verse that says a person should not go out of his place on the seventh day, doesn't mean just sitting at home, shouldn't go out of his place. His place is the place, let's say the city he's living. That 2,000 ammas outside the city, 960 meters out of the city, is biblically prohibited. De'oraisa. That's one opinion. Another opinion is that actually that's the biblical prohibition to go out of your place is 12 mil. 12 mil. A mil is 2,000 amma, which means 12 mils would be approximately 11 and a half kilometers, if I'm not mistaken. At any rate, that doesn't... we don't have to know the details because that's de'oraisa, that's biblically. Rabbinically, clearly there's a prohibition on going any further than 2,000 ammas outside the city. Some say, there's a third opinion, that the whole concept of not going out of your tchum, not going out of your, not going out of the city, and with a distance, is all rabbinic. Okay? So there's three opinions, but basically what I want to just say, because to get out of the halacha very clearly, if you're out of the city, basically one step is like one amma, just roughly. So you gotta count to make sure you don't take more than 2,000 steps outside the confines of a city. Like let's say if you took a cabin in the middle of somewhere. Okay, so in the laws of tchum, in the laws, this is called the tchum. Tchum is the perimeter. And the laws of perimeters of Tchumim, Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanon have an argument in the tractate of Eruvin. And this is how it goes in the Mishnah. Somebody who found himself as Shabbos came in, as it became nighttime of Shabbos, night fell, and he's outside that boundary, that Tchum of the city. You're right? Even if he's just one amma. So an amma is about 48 centimeters. Even if it's basically just one step out of the city, out of the city limits, I'll call it, tchum, the city limits, he's not allowed to go back in. Once you're out, you can't come back in on Shabbos. Rabbi Shimon says, even if he's 15 ammas out, he's allowed to come back in. Why? 15 ammas is about, you do 15 times 48. even if he's even if he's 15 amas out, you're going to come back. And why? Because the people that make, that define the confines, that define the boundaries of the city where the 2,000, in Jewish cities, there would be a place. Till here you can go, don't go further. Those people that are marking the boundaries always give us a little leeway. They're aware that people may be pushing their limits to the end. And so they usually don't do it exactly. And they'll at least 15 amma stay away from the actual limit. Because some people may make a mistake and not, you know, so they may go a little further. So they push the limit 15 ammas closer. For those that may have gone there unintentionally. So therefore, if the person finds himself, as the night fell, up to 15 amas outside the city limits, he can come back in. Because he's really, he's in it. But just when they measured it, they wanted to give some leeway. Just a parenthetical example. They say, I don't want to try it, although unfortunately I have. When you get to empty in the car, there's still a little bit of gas there. You can still go for a while. Because people, you know, people push their limits to the end. So, you know, right? So that's the concept. Now, the reason that Rabbi Shimon, this aspect of Rabbi Shimon's approach, that for 15 amas, you're still within the actual trum, is also summed up in the last Mishnah of the portion of the tractate of Erevin. It says like this. Rabbi Shimon said, in the place that the Chacham, in the place that the sages allowed you, they actually allowed you from what really belongs to you. And then he continues, for they didn't permit for you only when it's a rabbinic prohibition. What does the Gemara explain? Gemara explains that Rabbi Shimon is explaining his rationale for two different laws. One of them is the law we just taught, that if you're outside the Trum, if you're outside the confines within 15 amas, you can still come back in. As the language in this last mission is, where they permitted you, they gave you yours. In other words, you're really in the confines. They didn't allow something prohibited. They said, actually, it's yours anyway. It's not prohibited. 15, that was a safeguard 15. You're in that safeguard 15 amas. And then, when he said the next part of that statement, which is that they only allowed you to do it when it's a rabbinic prohibition, that's a reference to another Mishnah that he had been involved in, another argument he had been involved in. What's the other argument? Earlier in that same chapter in Erevin, it says, you're allowed to tie a string, a strand. Think of guitar string. You're allowed to tie a strand in the Beis HaMikdash, but not outside the Beis HaMikdash. So if you have to retie, for example, your guitar string, you're not allowed to play guitars anyway. You have to retie a string. In the Beis HaMikdash, they did play instruments. You have to tie a string. You can do it in Beis HaMikdash, but not outside the Beis HaMikdash. But to initially tie a string that wasn't even... If you're tying a string that was broken, it had been taut, and then it broke, you can tie it back together again in the Beis HaMikdash. If it was... You can't initially decide to string an instrument in the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos. Only if it was already there and it broke, you could tie it. Outside the Beis HaMikdash, even to retie a string that had broken, you also couldn't. And Rab Shimon had a different opinion. And Rab Shimon says that, you know what you can do? Don't tie it, even in the Beis HaMikdash. Because the other teaching that's taught there is that a Ben Levi, a Levite, who's supposed to be using the instrument in the Beis HaMikdash, even on Shabbos, and one of the strings of his instrument, of his string instrument, broke, there is an opinion that he should tie it, a full tie. They would tie it with a double knot. Rabbi Shimon says, no, don't tie it. Make a bow. Why? Because this is what he's explaining in the second part of his statement. Because when they allowed you to do something on Shabbos, they only allowed you to do something that's a rabbinic prohibition. What's the difference between when you're not allowed to tie? Biblically, Minat Torah, you're not allowed to tie something on Shabbos in a permanent knot. So a double knot, it's considered a permanent knot, you can't tie it. A bow, actually, we tie our shoes on Shabbos. with a bow, because a bow is easily undoable. So with a bow, you usually wouldn't be able to tie this bow in this instrument either on Shabbos. But that's a rabbinic prohibition in case you come to doing a permanent knot, right? So he said, no, the Levite has a choice to do a rabbinic prohibition, which is to tie it with a bow. In our shoes, it's permissible totally. But in the instrument, you could tie it with a bow. Usually a bow is prohibited because you may come to actually tie it fully. So the rabbis prohibited even a bow in that circumstance. However, because you're in the Beis HaMikdash, they relaxed it. And they said you're allowed to do a bow. And this is what he meant, that the rabbis permitted you to do something which was, in the first place, only a rabbinic prohibition. Tying bows could not get you to being obligated to bring a sacrifice for violating Shabbos. That would have to be if it was a double knot. They prohibited making a bow because you may come to do a double knot. That prohibition they relaxed in the Beis HaMikdash, says the Levi needs to play his string instrument and the string ripped, tie it with a bow. And the connection between these two, Rashi explains, the connection between these two halachas is, Rabbi Shimon is saying like this, even though that I said that you can come into the city confines, even if you were stuck outside before Shabbos, and yet here I say, don't tie the string. I'm being stringent here about the string. You know why? Because there, we gave you what really is yours. You were never outside the confines. The city planners usually give you a little leeway. So they said the confines are closer than they really are. But here, we have to relax a rabbinic prohibition. And we're not going to relax. I can't allow you to tie the string because that could be a biblical prohibition. I can only allow you to bow it because that's a rabbinic prohibition. I can allow that. And the Tosfos says, actually, even more. Tosfos says that it's just like these two things are actually exactly the same. You're not violating the city limits because you're actually still within the limits. You just didn't know. And he says, you're actually not violating the Shabbos by doing a bow. A bow is actually permissible. So he says, it's really literally the same exact thing. We're only letting you do what's really permissible. You just weren't aware that it was permissible. Now, let's ask the Rebbe. We want to understand, what is the connection between these two laws that that he has to explain, or Shimon has to explain, although I was lenient by the city confines, I'm being more stringent in the laws of tying the knot in the instrument of the Beis HaMikdash. Why would we think that just because he was lenient there, he should be, that would make him lenient here? Like, what's the connection? Now, according to what Tosfos says, that actually he's lenient in both because actually they're both permissible, right? We also have a question. He should have just said, he should have just explained why he's being lenient about the city confines, because it's really, you're really not outside the confines. And then we would understand that that's the reason why he would be stringent in tying the knot. You're not allowed to tie a knot because it's a prohibition. there's no prohibition when you get stuck outside the confines. You're not really outside the confines. So what's the connection? Why does he have to add another aspect? He says, because I only allow things that are rabbinic. The rabbis can say, you know, we prohibited it, but in certain circumstances, like in the temple, we'll permit it. Why do we need to answer that? We understand why he's more stringent in the case of the torn string, because there's an actual prohibition. In the case of being outside the confines, you just weren't outside the confines. Why does he have to really explain that? The Mishnah is supposed to be very short, remember. So why explain that? Why spell it out? So, like, what's the connection between the two? Just because you're lenient here, we have to explain why you're stringent here. Like, okay. Also, we have to understand that there's another part to this Mishnah. The last Mishnah that we're quoting now, where Rabbi Shimon makes this statement, when I said you can do it, The rabbis only said you can do it because it's really permissible. And I only allowed, they only allowed you to do something that they prohibited, and then they say permissible. That follows another law in the Mishnah, which is, the law is, if an insect, a dead insect, one of those that creates impurity, if it was found in the Beis HaMikdash, we'll learn later the details of the argument, but there's a discussion about that case. How should it be taken out? What's that got to do with this other statement we just learned about Rabbi Shimon talking about the mechanics of why he allowed coming in from the confines and doesn't allow tying them up? What's the connection between this and finding an impure insect in the Beis HaMikdash? Now, here's the thing. In the footnote, the Rebbe says, the way Mishnahs are divided are also exact. So, you can't just say, well, they put two things together in the same Mishnah. No. And we know that, you know how we know that? It's a very interesting halacha. If somebody engages a woman, he's going to get married to her, so he does the first process, giving her the ring. We do it now under the chuppah. And he says, I want you to be betrothed to me, and I'm telling you, I'm contingent on the fact that I know how to read Torah. Oh, how much Torah does he have to know to fulfill that criteria? Because basically it's a contingent. If he's knowledgeable in Torah, the marriage will be valid. If he's not, so he's hinged it on that, so the marriage is not a marriage. How much do you have to know of Torah to be considered Yodea, knowing Torah? The law is you got to know three verses at least. If a person says, I know Mishnah, how many Mishnahs do you need to know? The halacha is you need to know three Mishnahs. So, depending on where the Mishnah division is, if they kept all this in one Mishnah, that's only one Mishnah. If it would be divided in two, it would be considered two out of the three. That could make it or break it between being considered to know Mishnah or not know Mishnah. So you see that the number, and there's actually one place in the Mishnah, there's a Mishnah that has two numbers to it. It's considered both four and five. What's the difference? Why is it considered four or five? It's really just one chapter. And it could make a difference for this halacha. If you knew that Mishnah plus the Mishnah that has two numbers attached to it, it's considered really two in one, you may be considered knowing three, right? So anyway, the Rebbe is just pointing out here that Mishnah division is really relevant. So the fact that the law of finding an impure insect in the Beis HaMikdash is in the same Mishnah as Rabbi Shimon following up and saying about the law of being outside the confines of the city when Shabbos comes in, and the law of tying the knot in the instrument on the Beis HaMikdash, they're all somehow related. What's the relationship? Okay, so we'll understand. Let's understand in general a little bit more of the dynamics of what's going on here. There is a mitzvah actually to try and make sure that you're able to carry between the various yards. I would give an example today of this in apartment buildings. Apartment buildings have private domains and have common area, right? The hallways and so on. The halacha on Shabbos is, unless you make an eruv, unless you take bread and put it in one of the homes and say everybody has participated in this one, in this one big loaf of bread, right? And therefore we're all mixed, Eruv, we're all mixed somehow together. If you haven't done that, you can't take from your private area to your common area. It's a rabbinic law, because the common area seems to be like public property. Your private area is private domain. It may be confusing, may be confused with actually taking from a real private domain to a street, which is biblically prohibited. So the Rabbanon said, even in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, you're not allowed to take from private to semi, to quasi-public, which would be, for example, if you were living, you know, in a community, like a gated community where you all share courtyards or something. So you need to join together to be able to carry from one home to the other. Otherwise, each home is its own domain. Okay, that's just apartment building is a good example. So it's a mitzvah to try and make that kind of eruv that you should be able to carry from home to home. Why? Because there's a benefit to it in order to be able to share and to bring food from one place to the other. And that's a mitzvah, as it says. you should call the Shabbos a day of enjoyment. And so we understand that this would be the case here also. For the enjoyment of Shabbos, you should be in the city confines where you're allowed to move freely. It's really very restrictive when you can't move. You got to stay in your own four cubits. If you can't come into the city, you got to stay within your own confines. Big problem, right? I mean, you're allowed to. The thing is, you'd be allowed to go up to 960 steps. You're allowed to go up to 960 steps, up to 2,000 amas, about 2,000 steps. That's true. But you're not going to be able to walk around the whole city. So that's limiting. So we'd rather have the person in the city confines. But that's really like just to be stuck a couple of meters outside the city and now you're limited. You can only walk 2,000 steps in any direction. Very big limitation. So by having him stuck, whereas if you're in the city confines, you can walk the whole huge city. You can have a city with 10 million people. You just walk as much as you want, wherever you want. So that's freedom on Shabbos, to be able to walk wherever you want. Being stuck outside the confines is the opposite of the joy of Shabbos, of the pleasure of Shabbos. So therefore, you could say that in a way, if you're stuck outside the confines, you also have an obligation. On the other side, you have an obligation for making your Shabbos enjoyable. So there's a mitzvah for you to get into the city confines, but you can't get into the city confines. You know why? Because if there's a prohibition, right? This prohibition of being outside the Trum, and you're outside the Trum, you can't just bring yourself back in there and consider yourself as being as part of the city confines. So b'meila, we have to say like this. The Shita, why does Rabbi Shimon say you can go back in? You should try and go back in. Because there's an interesting intellectual argument here. That is, does a large quantity, even though it may be qualitatively less, is that more important than a large, something that's large, that looms large qualitatively, but it's smaller in number? This is a discussion that's had by one of the sages about 100 years ago, whose name was Rabbi Yosef Engel. Big, long discussion. And you go through the Torah, you can see this very interestingly. We're going to apply it to our case here. So here's what the question is. Rabbi Shimon says, come into the city confines. Be part of the city confines. Because why? If you're going to stay out, what's going to happen is the whole Shabbos is many hours, many minutes, right? For all those minutes and all those hours, you're going to have a quantitatively long time where your Shabbos enjoyment is compromised. It's not complete. Going into the city confines will be one move. There may be one prohibitive aspect associated to it, but it will be done in 1 second. Move back into the city confines. The prohibition, the compromise on your Shabbos enjoyment is going to be ongoing the whole Shabbos if you don't make that one move and come back in. So you have a in quality, getting up and going back into the city confines could be a worse prohibition qualitatively, but in quantity, not having the pleasure of Shabbos may be qualitatively not such a bad violation. You haven't done anything also. You're just doing it by not enjoying the Shabbos. But it's going to be a long time, it's 24 hours. So what's better, to stay out there and have a large amount of Shabbos compromisation, or to go back in and have an action that is compromising of Shabbos, but then the whole Shabbos quantitatively will be more enjoyable? And that's the argument here, right? So b'meila, so therefore, what we're saying is like this. Rabbi Shimon says, go back in. You know why? Because he says, going back into the city, you're only doing, if there is a compromisation, a violation of some aspect of the Shabbos, it's just a one-moment thing. Qualitatively, it's worse. Echus. But kamos, quantitatively, you're stopping yourself from having a really long period of disturbance of Shabbos. And Rabbi Shimon is teaching us the law that even though usually we say quality is better than quantity, right? Quality is better. We talk about quality time. Oh, I didn't spend quantity time with my kids, but I gave them quality time. Quality. But there's something about quantity. If you have a lot of quantity, it's even better than quality. I'll give you a... I think this example would work. You know, it says that, the Gemara says, speaking is worth one sela, but being quiet is worth two. So somebody once said to the Rebbe, that's why I don't talk so much. The Rebbe told him, if you're talking good things, do the calculation. If one word is one sela, and being quiet is two sela, so if you choice between saying one word or two, two is worth more. What is if you're going to say five words? Five words is like five selas. Being quiet is only two. So there's something about quantity that also, by definition, creates a greater quality. And this is what Rav Shimon is telling us. Don't stay out for the 24 hours of Shabbos. Get back in. Your quantity, because in quantity, you're going to be doing better for the Shabbos. According to this, paragraph 3, according to this, that Rav Shimon's approach is that better to violate, that a large quantity is more meaningful even than a smaller amount, even though it's bigger in quality. Well, now understand that the explanation between these two halachas that we said, right? That where they allowed you to come in, they gave you from yours. And the next one, that they only allowed you to do what's a rabbinic prohibition. Let's go now to fixing the string. Fixing the string has two ways to do it. You could tie it in a permanent knot. You could do it in a bow, which is not permanent. Each one of them has a stringency that the other doesn't have. What is that? There's a problem when you tie... when you tie, you may tie in a way of permanence, and that could be a real biblical violation that you're obliged to bring a sacrifice for. That's qualitatively, that's much worse. When you do a bow, it's only a rabbinic prohibition, but why is it a rabbinic prohibition? Because it doesn't stay permanently. But for that very reason, if it doesn't stay permanently, you may have to do it many times. So it could be that doing a bow is actually not as good, because you may have to many times retie that bow. Right? If you do it more permanently, you'll just do it once. So that qualitatively, you're doing something worse by tying it once. But maybe quantitatively, in terms of the amount of times you're going to have to be doing this other prohibition of doing a bow, which is a more lenient prohibition, but it's still, you're not allowed to do it outside the Beis HaMikdash. So maybe we should just do it once. Just tie it properly. Right? So, and I would think that after Rabbi Shimon tells us, so Rabbi Shimon has this logic, he says, I've told you that for an Eruv, when you're stuck outside outside the confines of the city, I told you to come back in. Which means I'm telling you that the quantity, the amount of minutes you're going to be spending with a compromised Shabbos is so important and so powerful that I'll tell you even to violate going into the Trum, which is qualitatively a worse action. So you would think, oh, so I should tell you to tie the knot on the string. Because again, if you just do a bow, quantitatively, you're going to have to maybe tie many times on the Shabbos. So just do it once, because the quantity is overrides the quality, right? He says, no. Rabbi Shimon is telling us a statement that says, I told you this about the confines, but that's because it's yours. There was no prohibition. They give you a little leeway. They told you it's the end of the confines, but you really have another 15 amos till you get to the actual. So that's why I said better to relax, the quantity will go over on the quality. However, here, when it comes to tying, I'm going to be more stringent. Why? I'm going to tell you, do the bow, even though you may have to do quantitatively, you may have to do a lot more bows because it may get untied. Because when can we say that we allow you to pay more attention to the quantity, even if you're qualitatively going to do something more stringently worse? Only if it's rabbinic. If they both belong to one same level of prohibition, either both biblical or both rabbinic, then we can say we're going to look at where you're going to do more quantity of violation. And perhaps we'll tell you to do a more stringent violation, but this way you'll do less quantity of a more lenient violation. Only when on the same level, either both biblical or both rabbinic. Here, however, when it comes to tying and making a bow, very important to know, tying is biblically forbidden, to tie a double knot, a real serious knot. A bow is a rabbinic prohibition. The rabbinic prohibition, even though you may have to do it a bunch of times in the Beis HaMikdash, do the rabbinic one. That's what we're going to allow you to do. Even though you, so the statement in the Gemara, right, in the Mishnah, even though in the they come together because saying in the confines of Shabbos, I told you come in, do something qualitatively worse because of the quantity. But I didn't say that by, because that's really yours, was never forbidden. I didn't say that by tying the string, because we can only say that when it's a rabbinic. Tying, not going to be rabbinic. So therefore, do a bow, because, right? You can't do something more, okay. In other words, you can't do something more quality if it's a different level quality, if it's much more serious, if it's biblical. Then you'll do more quantity of the rabbinic. We have a proof for this, a very interesting proof. The Alter Rebbe says in his Shulchan Aruch, if somebody is sick to the point of danger, and he needs meat, so then we shecht for him. We don't say, well, why don't we, let's weigh the prohibitions. Eating non-kosher meat is a biblical prohibition that brings with it the concept of a lav. In other words, the punishment for it is lashes if it was done, if it was done willingly. Let's not violate, shechting an animal on Shabbos, though, is a violation of Shabbos. Violation of Shabbos done willingly and intentionally is called the isur skila, has the punishment of stoning. It's a capital punishment, much more serious. So why are we, for somebody who's ill and needs to eat fresh meat right now, why don't we just give him non-kosher? That's a prohibition, a lower biblical prohibition, than shechting an animal at Shabbos, which is a full-blown Shabbos prohibition. Now, we understand we're allowed to do it to save a life. But why don't we stay with a lower-level prohibition? And the reason is because when he eats not kosher, each bite is doing a prohibition. The shechita, the act of slaughtering the animal properly, according to Halacha, is a one-time taking of life. It's a one moment. Right? So what do we have? We say, don't do the quantitative prohibition that's going to be on every bite. Do something that's worse to violate than even something that's more quality. So we see the quantity takes precedence here, even over a more qualitatively stringent prohibition, which would be shechting. However, there's something else. If they're both not on the same level, if one's biblical and one's rabbinic, for example, if he needs to drink warm wine, now it's wine, you know, that wine that's been handled by a non-Jew, if it hasn't been pasteurized before, but if it's a natural wine and hasn't been and it's been handled by a non-Jew, it's going to be a prohibition of rabbinic nature. It's called stam yenam. The rabbis made a prohibition on wine because wine used to be used for sacramental purposes for idolatry. They made a blanket rule: any wine that was produced and handled by non-Jews is considered to be a possibility, fits in the blanket rule. It's forbidden. Just in case it was one of those wines that was sacramental. It's a rabbinic prohibition. Now he needs to drink. We have a Jew who's sick on Shabbos and the doctor says he needs to drink warm wine. I got to warm up wine now on Shabbos. What am I going to do? If I get the non-Jew to warm up the wine, what's going to happen? He's not going to be able to drink the wine. It's rabbinically prohibited. But if the Jew turns on, heats up the wine, he's going to violate cooking on Shabbos. That's biblical. So the halacha is, the Jew should put the wine in the pot, and the non-Jew will actually cook it. Now when the sick person is drinking, he's going to be drinking wine that rabbinically is prohibited, but it's only rabbinically prohibited. And we're not going to allow for a Jew to light a fire, which is biblically prohibited, so that his fellow Jew, or that he himself even, shouldn't be drinking wine that's rabbinically prohibited. You see, there, you can only do the quantity and quality when it's the same level of prohibition. Right? Okay. Interesting thing, you can't prove from this halacha conclusively. You can't prove. The Rebbe says this is where we see this concept. When there's a rabbinic and biblical, so then you can't say that because there's going to be more prohibition, the guy's going to drink wine. Every drink is going to be drinking rabbinically prohibited wine. That's why we should let that quantity should influence our decision that we should tell the Jew to turn on the fire. No. that turning on the fire is biblically prohibited. Drinking every sip is rabbinically prohibited. But you can't prove it conclusively. You know why? Because the Al-Tareba, the Rebbe brings in the footnote, the Al-Tareba brings two other reasons why we're going to say that you can. Two other reasons the Al-Tareba says why you're not allowed, why on Shabbos, don't get him to eat non-kosher, rather shecht, because a person, a Jew who keeps Torah is going to be so, it's going to be hard for him to eat non-kosher. It's going to disgust him. It's not going to help his healing. Interesting. So that's another reason. And there is another reason. I don't remember the other reason. I'm sorry, I looked it up. I forget. But then there's another concept in spiritual language you may know from the Tanya. The Tanya says simply that quantity does add up to be more powerful than quality. He says, if you do, I'll paraphrase, that, you know, there are some sins that are called karet. They cut off, God forbid. They're so serious. They cut off. Like, what an example is eating bread on Pesach, for example. So the Al-Tareba says like this, even if somebody didn't do such a serious sin that has the punishment that's called karet, being cut off, but he did other sins that are considered much more lenient, but take into account that if you, many sins that are done, lenient sins that are done and are recurring, they can create a disturbance in the connection between the neshama and Hashem, even more than a stringent sin that's done once that has a cutoff stipulation attached to it. Just like, says the Al-Tareba in his analogy, just like if you put levels if you put layers of mechitzas, of things that, of dividers, one thick divider may filter out a certain amount of light, but if you put even thinner dividers that filter out less light, but if you put a bunch of them, they're going to create more darkness than that one thing, because there's something. So there is something we see, simply speaking, and Al-Tareba and Tanya already teaches us that there's the quantity is something we have to pay attention to. Okay, so according to this, we'll understand. So now, based on the fact that we're speaking about quantity and quality, that's at the discussion here. That Rabbi Shimon said, you don't want to stay outside the Tchum, you're going to have a quantitatively compromised Shabbos. It's going to be many, many hours. So do the one act of going in. But he said, don't get me wrong, that's, I can only tell you that about the confines of Shabbos, because really, you're not outside your city limits. But when it comes to tying the bow, I'm going to tell you, well, we're not going to tell you just do one string, one tie, because it's going to be less quantity of retying. No, because doing the bow is rabbinic. So I'm going to tell you, just keep doing that. Tying a real tie could be biblical. Stay away from that. You can't cross that limit. Now we'll understand. What about what's the other thing we mentioned? The first part of this Mishnah is about finding an insect that's impure in the Beis Hamikdash. What does it say? It says like this. The Mishnah says, if you found a sheretz, like a reptile or insect that's dead in the Beis Hamikdash, and that would be impurity. You got it out. You got to get it out of the Beis Hamikdash. Cohen's in the Beis Hamikdash. Oops! I found this impure thing. So the first opinion in the Mishnah is take it out. The Kohen should take it out with his shirt. No, just to get it out of there, not to let the impurity stay there for longer. You found it. It's bad enough. This impure item is dead. Just get it out with your shirt as quickly as possible. Problem is, you're going to be making your shirt impure. That's what Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka said. Rabbi Yehuda said, no, go get a wooden tongs. Wooden tongs do not become impure. And take out the tumah, because we don't want you to make something else impure. It's bad enough that there's an impure thing. If you're going to take it with your shirt's going to become impure. If you're going to take it out with the wooden tongs, you haven't touched it, and the wooden tongs are not going to become impure. The impurity will be in the Beis Hamikdash longer, but you won't have created more impurity. Okay, so we can say that this is the same reasoning here. The argument is based on the same logic we're talking about, quantity and quality. In other words, one opinion is that one says that it's better to get it out quickly, because otherwise you're going to have a longer quantity of time. The other says, yeah, but you're going to create a qualitatively worse impurity because you've made something else impure, your shirt. So wait, keep the quantity longer, the time that the impurity is there, but qualitatively, don't compromise something else by making a tummy, get something wooden. So, this is a connection. This is the argument. So in other words, we see that the Mishnah is talking about the same theme. Is it quantity or quality? Which one do we have to... is a lot of quality going to say that this is more stringent and pay more attention with even then more quality? Quality, yeah. Okay, there's another thing at play here in the footnotes. There's another issue, and that is there's doing or passive, right? So I'm not going to go into that, but just think of it staying outside the confines of the city is passive. Getting up and going in is active. What we're saying here is even if you're going to be there for if that's going to be a long time, even though it's passive, and now you're going to actually do something that's somewhat prohibited in an active way, so it's also worse in that way. Doesn't matter, but the quantity is going to get you, even if it's passive, it's going to get you to do something active, which is perhaps negative, but because... Okay, anyway, I'm not going to go there for time constraints, and that will be the topic of a whole shiur in itself. Amazing, unbelievable. I'm pointing it out because there's so much erudition going on here in the Rebbe's footnotes. To explain, paragraph 5, to explain, possibly, the Rebbe says, Bederech Efsher, possibly explain. I'll throw in, it's right before Yud Shvat, we talk about being connected to the Rebbe's Nesius. I don't remember I think the previous Rebbe was saying a mimer to his father, repeating a mimer, which his father had said, you could say this, and the Friedrich Rebbe says, and the answer is, he didn't say you could say, but Bederech Efsher, possibly. He said, the father interrupted, I said you could say possibly. He says, yeah, well, what by my father and teacher is a possibility is by me for sure. So the Rebbe says here, we could possibly explain the connection. So of course, by us, it's we can explain the connection between these two rules of Rabbi Shimon and the difference between them in the Pnimius. Now we're moving over to explain this more in an esoteric way, in the inner aspect of the Torah. And we'll also understand, according to this, why Rabbi Shimon says, where you're allowed to tell the person to come back in, he says, come back in. It's you should come back in. Let's understand. It's explained and here we're going to get this beautiful explanation on Shabbos. Explained in several places that the basis of all the laws of Shabbos is one of the laws that seems actually most non-stringent, and that is the laws of taking from domain to domain. So taking from the street, bringing something to your house, or something like that, or from the house to the street. The Medrash says that a heretic asked Rabbi Akiva, if, like you say, that Hashem really also honors the Shabbos, and we keep Shabbos because he rested on the seventh day, and he still does, so there shouldn't be any winds blowing on Shabbos because it's air coming from domain to domain. Rain shouldn't come on Shabbos because it's coming from heaven to earth. Nothing should grow on Shabbos. You're not allowed to plant things on Shabbos. Why is Hashem making things grow on Shabbos? Why does botany still work on Shabbos? And Rabbi Akiva answered, you know, from the example of the ability we have on Shabbos to make an Eruv. We can fence in various areas and it becomes like one property. We can take common area, like in an apartment building or in a courtyard, and we all join together and we're allowed to carry from place to place. It becomes like one communal property. It's no longer public domain to private domain. That we've taken the quasi-public domain, it can't be done in real public domains, within quasi-public domains, and we can kind of privatize them. And then it's not carrying from domain to domain. It's all one domain. Says Rabbi Akiva, you know, for Hashem, it's all, the whole world is his domain. So, but what does he answer? You know, the question here is, all he answered is why Hashem can bring winds from one place to another, why he can bring rain from heaven to earth. But he hasn't answered, like, the other things. How does he get things to grow? That's a prohibition, not related with moving from domain to domain. He didn't answer that. So, the Rebbe in the footnotes says that the Medrash says, that the commentaries on the Medrash say, well, just like moving from place to place is easy for Hashem, everything is just like easy. It's one of the commentaries says, just like everything's easy for him, so it's not considered work. But that's not what the words of the Medrash of Rabbi Akiva's answers are. So the Rebbe says, really, we got to get to a deeper level of answer. What's the deeper level of answer? That really the whole basis of all the work of Shabbos is all to be found in this one concept of the prohibition of carrying from domain to domain. And by the way, once we explain that the root cause, the root concept of Shabbos in its intrinsic meaning is all expressed by not taking from domain to domain, we'll understand something else that's very difficult to understand when you learn the tractate of Shabbos. The first opening words of Shabbos speaks about four kinds of inter-domain transactions, movement from public to private, private to public, that are forbidden on Shabbos. It speaks about a poor person putting out in his hand and getting somebody giving him a loaf of bread to his hand, transferring from domain to domain, and about the violations of Shabbos therein. And really, why is that the first aspect of Shabbos? It seems to be actually one of the, in the 39 aspects of Shabbos, it's not the first one, it's the last one. All the commentaries ask the question, but in the inner aspect of Torah, what we can explain here is, if we explain that that's the basis and the core of the whole Shabbos prohibition, any Shabbos prohibition is all about domain to domain, we'll understand why the whole tractate of Shabbos starts with that. So let's explain, says the Rebbe, how Shabbos is all about going from domain to domain. And the Rebbe quotes here from the Arizal, the esoteric works, based on it. The Rebbe doesn't, footnotes them. It goes like this. The concept of Shabbos is that it's fully for Hashem. Yom Tov, we know it says about the holidays, should be half for you, half for Hashem. We're supposed to enjoy the Yom Tov. Shabbos is all about Hashem. In other words, the whole meaning of resting on Shabbos is to place in a permanent fixture into our heart the belief that Hashem created heaven and earth. That's why He created world in 6 days. On the seventh day He rested. We remember that, and that's what Shabbos embeds within us. Hashem created heaven and earth. This world is created by Hashem. And He's constantly creating as well. So, the 6 days of the week, He creates through speech. On the seventh day, just like the first cycle of creation, He rests. In other words, then, He withdraws, so to speak. Shabbos, the world emanates from, so to speak, Hashem's thought. And so therefore, basically what that means, that Hashem is the only and singular ruler of the world. Everything is His domain. Everything is exactly by individual divine providence. In other words, even though the world is created to look like it's a pup, like it's an independent entity, and people could be mistaken to think that the world runs on its own volition, that there's two domains. There's God, there's holiness, and there's... Just 1 second. There's holiness, and there's not holiness. One could make a mistake thinking that through keeping the Shabbos, what happens is a person believes and it gets implanted in his heart that the whole world is singularly God's domain. What do we understand? When somebody, God forbid, does a work on Shabbos, what he's doing is he's violating, he's weakening the belief that everything is Hashem's domain. And also, number two, he's creating more power to the mistake. Oh, if somebody's not honoring the Shabbos, he's adding his vote, so to speak, even without realizing it, to those that say, the world is its own entity. So what you're doing is you're taking, so to speak, you're moving energies or your awareness or public awareness from the singularity of the private domain of Hashem and taking it out to the other side, the side of multiplicity, the side of non-belief in the unity of God. And that is really the core of any time Shabbos is violated. With all of its 39 violations, it's all the same thing. You're moving away from the belief and the core of everything is Hashem's world. There's only one Hashem. He created heaven and earth. That's what Shabbos is about. He created heaven and earth. We have to believe it. And everything is totally by His command. And now we've taken out of that domain, out of the private domain, taken to the public domain. This is the core of Shabbos. So this is what Rabbi Akiva is saying. The whole world is His. Because by Hashem, it's impossible to talk about any concealment about His true reality. Everything in the world, even bad, even negativity, is all His singular domain. And that's going to be revealed at some stage. When Mashiach comes, it says, if a person goes to try and pick a fig on Shabbos, the fig tree is going to scream out, Shabbos! In other words, that's the reality of the world. Just now it's covered over. But the true reality of the world is that everything is Hashem. And the world itself will express that. So there cannot really be what Hashem does It's all him doing it. He's not moving away from his singularity. The whole world, the whole realm, anything that's happening is happening by him. That's what Shabbos is all about. It's all him. When we do something on Shabbos, God forbid if somebody does something that Hashem says not to on Shabbos, so we're showing, oh, we don't care what Hashem said. We're moving on to another domain. For him, it's all him. Understand? That's why the only answer Rabbi Akiva had to give was not about how he does other things on Shabbos. He says the whole world is his. Everything is his. Something's growing. None of that is detracting from the oneness of Hashem. So, now when we talk about this, let's talk about the fact that the world is created with three divisions. There are things that are holy, right? In other words, they represent Hashem. Putting on tefillin, for example. The tefillin are holy. They represent, when you put on tefillin, you're doing Hashem's work. You light Shabbos candles, you're doing Hashem's work. Then we have things that are forbidden. They represent division. Anything that the Torah says stay away from. For a Jew, chazer, pig, is the opposite of God. It's public domain. It's multiplicity. It's not the singularity of Hashem. It represents, Hashem said, don't do it. It represents negativity. Then we have the third aspect, the middle one. And that is optional. In other words, what are you going to do with it? Depends what you do with them. You have two choices. Either stay away from it because if you don't need it and it's luxury, maybe you want to, some things you should consider, you should be even holier because you don't want to be indulgent. Right? So you don't want to stay away from indulgence. On the other hand, there's also, maybe you can take that thing and actually elevate it and incorporate it into your service of Hashem, which is why it says, whatever you do, all your acts, whatever you do and interact in these permissible things should all be for the sake of heaven. You take money and use it for supporting a family and for helping others. Benevolence, you've made it holy, right? And in all the things you do, you should know Hashem. In other words, so now, if you want to translate this into the domains of Shabbos, we have on Shabbos, we have the private domain, that's like representative of the singularity of Hashem. Public domain, which represents the multiplicity and the antithetical to Hashem, so to speak. And then we have the domain, which is the middle domain. It could be like an apartment building, the common area. It could be made into a private domain if we all join together and say this is all going to be part of our private domain, or it could still be considered like a public domain. We have an option. We can do something that brings it together and brings it into the realm of holiness. So now we'll understand that really the concept of the city confines and the concept of joining together various properties to become as one singular property is all really one aspect, and that is making the confines and the property of the Jew, in other words, of the realm of holiness, greater. In and of itself, it's limited. Maybe it was just limited to my house. Now it applied to our common property, to our common area. So we've just expanded the reach of holiness. Similarly, for example, if I'm outside the city confines, we've extended the city's confines to a certain extent. In other words, not just the city is holy, where you're allowed to walk. You can't carry that, but you're allowed to walk. It extends even 2,000 amas. So now we can explain like this. Rabbi Shimon said, when did we allow you to go in to the city confines? Why is he? What's the connection between that and saying, when did we allow you to tie? We only allowed you when it's a rabbinic prohibition. What are we really saying? We're saying that there's a subtle thing here. Let me just get it again. There's one general concept, and that is we're talking about expanding the reach of holiness. So when can we expand? We can't expand into no man's land. If it's prohibited, multiplicity, that Hashem said stay away from. The way you proclaim my singularity is by staying away from those things. But there's the middle ground. The middle ground, if you're outside the city confines, get back in. That middle ground is still yours. You could still elevate that. Don't stay out. That could still be made holy. The tying a bow, that's a rabbinic prohibition. That's an area where, under certain circumstances, Rabbi Shimon says, in the Beis HaMikdash, you can still make that holy. You can incorporate that instrument into the service of the Beis HaMikdash. So they're both the same concept, that there's areas where we have to try and expand the reach of holiness. especially that actually we spoke before that there's three levels of whether the confines, what are the levels of biblical prohibition of the confines? We said one is that 2,000 amas is a biblical prohibition. One is that, no, 12 mil, which is 12 times 2,000, 24,000 amas are biblically prohibited. 2,000 amas is rabbinic. Or the third opinion is that the whole concept of the confines of the city is only rabbinic. And we could say that we actually have that same argument about rabbinic prohibitions on Shabbos. Some say that all rabbinic prohibitions of Shabbos are actually biblical prohibitions, because the Torah says, rest. On the Shabbos, tish bois, you should rest. That's an instruction to the Chachamim to give us extra perimeters of rest that we wouldn't come to on our own. Not just the biblical ones, but extra levels. So they're all biblical. The Bible, the Torah said, the Chachamim should add these things. Some say, no, there are some Shavusim, there are some rabbinical things that are actually biblical. And the Chachamim just explain them, the sages explain them, but there are some that are truly rabbinic only. And some say, no, they're all the what's called Shavus, all the rabbinic prohibitions of Shabbos are rabbinic. They're not, when the Torah says rest, that's just an asmachta. We're just basing it on the concept that the Chachamim should add things because we have a hint or a basis in the Torah, but it's not a clear instruction in the Torah to add rabbinic prohibitions on the Shabbos. I just throw in there that in general, there are very strict opinions, there are very basic opinions that hold, that the Torah says you have to listen to what the rabbis tell you, the Sanhedrin and the thing. That's why anything that says it in the Talmud is incumbent upon every single Jew as part of halachic Judaism. Okay, chapter 7. However, there's a big difference between being outside the city confines and between prohibitions of Shabbos. What's the actually opposite? What's the difference? The prohibition of doing work on Shabbos is that when you do work on Shabbos, you're actually violating the Shabbos. You're bringing negativity into, you're bringing multiplicity, you're bringing an anathema to the oneness of God into the Shabbos. And that's why it's called Chilul Shabbos. You're desecrating the Shabbos. The oneness of Hashem that's expressed by Shabbos, by God forbid, violating that, you're bringing unholiness into the holy place of Shabbos. It's like you're bringing in the language of the Kabbalists, you're bringing klippa, you're bringing the husk, which is usually discarded, you're bringing it into the Shabbos. However, when you're going outside your confines, what are you doing? You seem to be doing the opposite. You're taking the Shabbos to a place where it shouldn't go. You're taking it to the place of impurity. Violating Shabbos by doing work on Shabbos is bringing impurity into the Shabbos, into your place. Taking yourself outside of the confines where you should be is taking, so to speak, the Shabbos to a place of unholiness. And everybody has the Shabbos spirit in him. Here the Rebbe says that every Jew, whether he's a scholar, whether he's just a complete ignoramus and an unaffiliated, unobservant Jew, doesn't matter. The Shabbos is there equally in all of us. That's why we're not told that just who can't violate Shabbos or people that have a sensitivity to the holiness of Shabbos. No. Across the board, every Jew has all the prohibitions of Shabbos, and if God forbid he does them, it's a violation. Same violation if he's the biggest saint or the greatest non-saint. It doesn't make a difference. So any Jew that goes out of the confines of Shabbos, every Jew has Shabbos in him on Shabbos, means he's taking the holiness of Shabbos to a place of impurity. Now, you may say, well, one second, we do have the concept of reclaiming, bringing Shabbos to where it doesn't belong. In time, there's a concept called adding on Shabbos. You can take Shabbos on early and you can keep it late. And for you, it's Shabbos. So that's kind of, it's like reclaiming, like people reclaim sea land and make it and live on it. It's like reclaiming mundane time by bringing Shabbos early or taking it out late. You're spreading the holiness for Shabbos into. So why is it that a Jew can spread the holiness of Shabbos to time before and time after, when he goes out of his domain on Shabbos, out of the city confines? We say he's not taking the Shabbos with him, but he's taking the Shabbos into impurity. The reason for that is because the Torah tells us, in the Torah there's a law that speaks about adding Shabbos before and after. So the Torah gives us the power to be able to do that, to be able to transform mundane time into actual Shabbos time. Whereas here, the Torah says, no, you gotta stay. The Torah says you can't go out of your limits. Don't leave your place. That was the first verse that we started off the Sikha with. Don't leave your place on the day of Shabbos. And since that's the case, so we understand that being outside the confines of Shabbos is something that's creating and continuing a disturbance for the entire duration that you're there. You're Shabbos. You are an embodiment of Shabbos, and you're sitting outside the whatchamacallit, you're sitting outside the confines of the city, you know what you're doing. The Shabbos, the holiness of Shabbos, which you embody, is constantly being in pain, so to speak, being in a place of impurity. So that's why Rabbi Shimon says, come on in, quick, get back in. Where it's permissible. He said, because it's permissible, so get back in. It doesn't just say you could come if you want. That's why the language he uses, get back in, because get back into the realm of holiness. Don't take the Shabbos to where it doesn't belong, right? Okay, so this is a beautiful concept of understanding Shabbos from the... it's a beautiful way of understanding Shabbos in the context of why it's all based on that core aspect of not taking from public domain to private, not moving from domain to domain. Because all of Shabbos is about keeping the life as private domain. So here there's also in chapter, paragraph 8, there's a... I'm going to hit stop now, and I'm going to do a part 2.